week or like the month and carry it back by hand on the bus. Like, I don't even like carrying groceries on transit myself, and I'm an able-bodied young person. You know what I mean? I'm going off on like, I'm just going off, and I'm speaking very colloquially and not like necessary so academic wise. So I know like that can be a little jarring for some people, but I just think it's a very simple concept that everyone should get. I don't think necessarily tourism is the key to revitalize Chinatown. And I'm not saying I'm against tourism, but I don't see how tourism goes hand in hand with forgetting about our most vulnerable and marginalized groups. You know what I mean? If your revitalization of Chinatown does not include harm reduction and actually promotes harm to the local community, then that's not revitalizing Chinatown. And that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from there, and I agree in many ways. Two of the things that stood out to me was what you were saying, was the question about groceries, right? Like how are Chinatown seniors able to, like how are they going to be able to afford groceries? Well, the thing is also like transit is. It can be quite difficult for people to access public
Yes.
transportation as well. Not to reveal too much about myself, in my workplace, most of our clients are low-income newcomers, and we regularly have like a cache of bus tickets that our organization purchases for the specific use of our clients, and we go through them super quickly because. For a lot of people, they can't really afford to get like a three zone bus monthly bus pass every single month, right? Even one zone when it's how much is it right now? Maybe something close to $100. I haven't checked since today they changed the transit fares, but a lot of people who are on a very fixed income, you know, like if they're getting only a couple hundred bucks a month on their pension, that is expensive for them. The other thing that I really resonated with you on is like this question of like, you know, why is it okay for luxury condos to be developed in Chinatown when residents don't like them getting developed anywhere else? And the thing that I suddenly thought of was like, maybe it is an issue with how Chinatown has been framed for you know for a while, I would say probably for the past like 15 or so years as a tourist destination. I think I remember being in middle school. It must have been around the time we had the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, so about 2010, and I was delighted to see like the street banners, you know, on like lights. They had like this cute little panda, and it was like Tourism Chinatown or something like that. And at the time, I was like, oh, it's a cute little panda. That's nice. But I had never really, like, for me, I remember thinking, I didn't know people thought of Chinatown as a tourism destination. I didn't know that people toured Chinatown. Like my folks come here to like get medicinal ingredients and sometimes to like buy hardware appliances and things like that. And there are other people living here, but I didn't really understand what was so touristy about it because it was a neighborhood to me. It was a,
Yes,
yeah.
exactly. Sorry to interrupt, but that's exactly what it is. It's like Chinatown is a neighborhood first before it should be a tourist destination. Like, I'm not saying like we should just, abolish tourism and tourism does nothing for Chinatown, but I am saying, hey, there are real people here. There's, real people living here, real people who have long-standing businesses, and some of these long-standing businesses may, you know, benefit from tourism, but they also still benefit from the local population. And you can't just forget the local population and be like, oh, well, we're only doing this for tourism means, because then there's no humanity in it, if you ask me. And if it becomes solely tourism based, then are we just putting on a show and a facade of what is Chinese? Yeah, if we only invest in tourism for Chinatown, then we're not investing in the culture, actually. It's not genuine. It's just a show. It's a show for someone to come visit Chinatown for a day or however long they want to, if they're vacationing. And, you know, with new developments, maybe they'll get an Airbnb and be like, wow, it's so cute, and then just leave. And what does that do for people who are living here, who would be contributing long term, their whole lives, like long before we were born and continually now? Like, do those people not count? Right? Is tourism and creating this like display of what is Chinese for this person who's going to only be here for a day or 5 days, like, really that much more like important? And I also think, I don't know, I have a very complicated, nuanced perspective towards tourism, because tourism can be quite harmful. And to do a very like just a quick mention that makes it very easy and obvious, vacationing in Hawaii is extremely harmful to local residents. We don't need to go into that. People can just Google that, but that's a very much discussed topic that has a lot of discourse online. That's a good example of why tourism needs to be nuanced, or it can be extremely harmful.
Yeah, that really makes me think of, to kind of like borrow a little bit of some of Chinatown Today's writings on this subject, like the people who go to Chinatown who might live in the luxury condo, or who might just like spend a few days there to visit, a lot of the times they're not even supporting legacy businesses or anything like that, right? So like in many ways, like having more foot traffic in Chinatown does not guarantee that it is going to be beneficial for the residents or the businesses there, particularly the ones that have been there for several decades. The other thing that I think I thought of was a little bit about our conversation that we had privately a few nights ago about like what types of signifiers represent Chinese culture and Asian culture, and how so much of that, a lot of those signifiers, for example, such as like food memories or like holiday memories or things like that, like they have a lot of significance towards us, but we see that it becomes so commodified a lot of the times that it might end up pandering towards like non-Chinese people, non-Asian people, particularly white people. And that kind of ends for, you know, many people, that kind of ends up becoming like their selling point or their shtick, even though they can be doing some other things that are still cultural and are still like relevant to their interests.
In terms of like what you just said, I want to talk about like what are identifiers of culture. And since, you know, I'm an artist, and I've interacted with the local artist community, I will say like, and there's no like right or wrong way to do art unless you like sell out. That's a totally different topic, but we're not talking about that. Like I have like a food series pieces that I have as prints, and it's usually different types of meals, and I call it, like the anatomy of dim sum, the anatomy of siumei, which is like Chinese barbecue, anatomy of hot pot, and it's just like I draw different elements of that type of meal. And then at the bottom, I list out what they are. What I want to do that is like, I think it's like very fun. People love to see art that is like kind of like an unpacking, like, I don't know, like you put out different items basically on this grid that fits to the theme. But I wanted to take it a step further and like add a bit of education. And I keep I speak Cantonese, so I keep like the Cantonese pinyin there, and then with like, you know, like, translate in English for what that is. And I want that to be educational because I love that people like to share culture through food, but I don't want it to stop there because it's like, oh, I like your food, but I think like your culture is like so loud and stuff. Like, I love eating, I don't know, like I love eating dim sum, but why is this table beside me like so loud? It's like very rude. And I'm like, that is a very closed-minded westernized perspective, right? And I'm like, listen, you know, if you're gonna enjoy our food, you can also learn to enjoy being around us. That said, I also want to say, like, any artists that do like just food without like, you know, educational text, done nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying like what I like to do. And I want to just take a step further. And that's like a little gentle nudge, hopefully, for people to be like, yo, this is cool. And I made a joke that if like, I made a joke with my art collective that like, if you're like not savvy in Chinese food, but say like you really like want to try dim sum, you can take my like print with you, like the postcard side version, and then just bring it to dim sum and be like, can I have what's listed here? Easy peasy. Or, you know, if you happen to be, you know, like a non-Chinese person dating someone Chinese and you want to impress the family, you know, be like, I can order for the table, and then look at my print underneath the table and be like, let's get some hagao and some siumai. And then, you know, everyone's like, wow, it's so cool, you're so smart, you know our food. But actually that means you're actively just trying to do better and learn, which is better than just being someone who's like, oh, I love sushi, but I don't eat the raw fish. California rolls are really good, and so are avocado rolls. And I'm like, I don't think you know.
Yeah, California rolls are explicitly not Japanese and also not from California, apparently, yes. Right? So, yeah, I really see where you're coming from with that. Food is, it's so interesting because I feel like it being like a thing of like many people's lives and stuff like that. Like that
everybody
is,
eats.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's how we like kind of connect with our families and all that. And it can be such a personal experience, and often to see that it has been commodified. If I go on to Amazon, I can find, like, I don't know, like many stickers about random Asian foods, and it's like, this is kind of like the kind of cute little gimmick that we're trying to sell, cute little soy sauce bottles. It feels a little bit like empty, you
know? Yeah, like, I'm not gonna stop my fellow Asians from, you know, getting that bag. I'm not gonna stop my fellow Asians from, like, you know, with their art business and all that, but like, in terms of who's consuming it, I don't know, I feel like it's important to keep that in mind. It's like when I have conversations, and I might make a joke that's like a Chinese related joke, I'm not going to necessarily make that joke to someone who's white. I make it to someone who's Chinese that understands that this is a joke because we experience our culture the way it is. Like, I could, like, let's say I make a joke like, hey, you know, sometimes after dinner, I feel like being that uncle that as soon as he's done eating, gets up, sits on the couch, doesn't talk to anyone, doesn't put his bowl away. You know, that's a joke that I can talk about that people would get. And, you know, it's just me talking about how I just want to be kind of lazy. But if I said it to someone outside, they might be like, wow, are you like Chinese uncles like that? That's so rude. I would never do that at home. My uncles never do that. They always, like, I don't know, you know what I mean? And it's like, if you're going to produce something and I'm not trying to be on a high horse, it is really good to also remember that different people are going to consume your work and how they're going to consume it, right? Just harm reduce, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Commodification makes everything just a lot harder to deal with in life, you know.
Yeah.
As yeah, it is. There is the time.
There is no ethical consumption under modern day capitalism, but that doesn't mean we can't do our best.
So many things that are interrelated to being a person of the Chinese diaspora living in Canada. It's July 1st on the day we're recording this. It's Humiliation Day. We are discussing some of the complicated things around Canada and being a Chinese person living in Canada and such. And it's a good time. It's really great. We are basically shoulders deep in this conversation at this point. I really do want to talk a little bit about what you're doing for Chinatown Gal, because you've been doing some really, you know, you've been doing some really great work around raising awareness towards gentrification in Chinatown, asking a lot of very relevant and challenging questions that many people who aren't as engaged with the issue should be asking. You have ways for people to show up right now for Chinatown residents. So can you talk a little bit more about that?
For sure. So with what I heard about like the 105 key for developments, it was very upsetting that, you know, we're going to go ahead and build luxury condos. I actually spent a few days crying about it, amongst some other similar topics branching off of that that affected me. I was really upset and conflicted about some other stuff that was still relevant to this topic. I said earlier, I like my art to, when I am doing something that's relevant to like life right now, I want to make it educational. So I made like a little comic that I'm turning into a zine, just about one of my memories in Chinatown, and that has to do with gentrification and how that is relevant and very frustrating and upsetting to me about 105 Kiefer right now, in hopes that like people will read it and understand my perspective. Like I have so many opinions, and I've been in activist circles and in social justice dialogue, like privately, but I've never been super public because I'm just scared of the internet and people recognizing me in real life. But this time I decided to post, and I wanted to start off the conversation easy, so I made it personal. Because it's a personal story, that's not anything people can contest. And my focus was to highlight the struggle that Chinese people have faced in Canada, and that this development of luxury condos is added on to that history, but right now, and who that affects, which is like our senior population in Chinatown. And I want to focus on the topic of all this like cool, fun gentrification stuff that people think is cool and fun is really harmful. And I'm in my zine, I feel like I'm not shouting at the reader. I'm pleading with the reader, like, you know, please. And I don't want to plead. I'd rather shout, but I'm going from the education aspect in hoping that, you know, that will help educate people so they understand. That said, I don't want people to tone police anyone who is like vocally angry about what's happening, because you should be. And in a lot of civil rights movements in the past, it was not necessarily peaceful, because you'll just get bulldozed. by people in power. So, like, sorry, going off on tangent. I want to make sure that when I talk about my stuff being educational and that I'm trying to have people empathize with me, I don't want people to use this statement of mine to be to weaponize it on people who have been actively advocating for Chinatown and Chinatown senior population and saying you should be just as palatable as Gal. Because I listen, I don't think you need to be palatable to tell someone that you're harming a community. I'm just not used to being very public, so I decided to do something that is more personal and emotional. And while I actually think it's quite palatable, I've learned it's not palatable to certain people. And I was shocked because I'm like, I didn't mention anything bad about like anyone, unless you identify as a gentrifier, then I guess, but that's on you. But anyways, like, this scene I'm making, is going to be something that I'm selling. It's going to be pretty like low cost, so it's accessible to people. But this scene, along with all of my art at one of the upcoming markets, is going to, like, all 100% of proceeds are going to go to Yarrow Society. And I'm donating to Yarrow because it is youth and senior led. And they have always been advocating and effectively, mindfully, and positively impacting Chinatown. And everything they do is essentially what we need to revitalize Chinatown, in my opinion. Yarrow Society is nuanced in their thinking, their actions, they're effective, they're educational. They, like, for example, like, one thing Yarrow does is that they have volunteers go and take seniors to doctor's appointments and to help translate. Sometimes that's not accessible for some seniors, right? They don't know where to go. They might not, like, be able to access a doctor who speaks like Cantonese, Mandarin, Toisan, any of the many Chinese dialects, because we're not a monolith. And I'm like, who else is doing that? You know, if you don't have a family member to do that for you, who else is doing that? And I think Yarrow is very much deserving of more funding. And yeah, for whatever sales I make, I'm going to match it up to $200 because full-time artist, tattoo artist, and the economy's not doing so well, but I will be matching it. I'm matching whatever I make up to $200, and that's all going to go to Yarrow. And for my zine, when I sell it at other markets in the future, I'm going to be just like saving up whatever I make on those zines to also just go to Yarrow, because I want this to be continued support and not just like a one-time thing.
Yeah, definitely. That's I really relate with you. I really sit with you in the feelings of sadness finding out that 105 Kiefer, the development, was passed. I also sit with you in the feeling of like not wanting to feel like I need to plead for people to pay attention to this. But instead that it should just be a thing that people should know. I shouldn't have to feel like I'm begging anybody to do it. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, a development that was proposed like I think almost 10 years ago. People have been like pushing back against it for nearly a decade, right? Like I was still in high school.
And the message is cleared. We don't want it.
Yeah. And it's been you know, quite disappointing that it has been passed anyways. And listeners, I have read this zine. It's really good. It's, you know, a very personal and also very thoughtful account and story of the harms that gentrification does to places like Chinatown that are cultural spaces for that have continued to thrive because of its residents, and how gentrification will ultimately affect them and has a very high potential of displacing them from the very place that they have been able to survive in. I think as I talk, the word that keeps coming up for me regarding like the passing of this development has been insult. It's like, it's such an insult to the face, I think, because thinking about how, I guess tying it back to our conversation that we had earlier today about like tourism in Chinatown, right? Chinatown is a tourist destination. This is a historical space in Vancouver. This is like, this is part of what has made Vancouver, Vancouver, because of its geography, but then also because of the many laborers who lived there, the many families that lived there that helped develop Vancouver into what it is, that has also helped develop Vancouver through helping its own community, right? And it has been very upsetting to see how that has it has been very upsetting to see how this development has just continued to live and thrive somehow. I do have many hopes that there will be work to be done to turn it into a social housing unit and a fully social housing unit.
I hope so.
Yeah, which is what many activists are trying to push for right now.
Sign the petition.
Yeah, sign the petition. It is there. It exists. It will be in the show notes later this week when this episode goes up. But I really have to commend you, Gal, for sharing your story and for your vulnerability in this zine. So you are going to be selling it at a market very soon and in upcoming markets. When is it going to make its print debut?
Actually, I'm going to be actually have a market right before like the big market, I guess, that I'm doing the fundraising for. So the first market I'll be at is going to be July 8th, and it's the New West Market. It's from 1 to 9 p.m., so it's like a night market of sorts. That zine will be there. That's the debut. But the day I'm donating like all proceeds of like any sales I make and like of any print is going to be on July 9th for Community Days at Sun Yat-sen Gardens. I also have an artist friend who will be donating some copies of her most popular print as well for this fundraiser. And I have a few other artists that want to participate either in just like donations or providing some of their like artwork for the table. So we will see.
Yeah, I recall you mentioning that you wanted to organize something with other local artists for your fundraiser. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? And if there's a listener who's interested in supporting, how can they contribute?
Yeah, I think like, there's like a way to do it like together or like separately together. I don't really want to put pressure on anyone because I think it's like just constraints and if anyone has capacity. Like if anyone wants to donate prints, I'd be happy to sell them on that day and we donate all proceeds. Of course, those artists will be credited and I will like have a little QR to each person's like website, Instagram, etc. Another great thing to do is if you would prefer not to provide prints for the market at Sun Yat-sen Gardens, is that if you do your own fundraising or if you do a raffle and then we can all donate it to Yarrow, but it can be on social media as a joint effort to just notify more people, right? Because we all have different followings, etc. It's really up to everyone on how they want to. I'd love to get in touch and like also just have that discourse going. And I think the more that people see that different artists are like connecting together on this topic, the more relevant it becomes, you know?
So how can people contact you